Sports Radio 99 The Game. Welcome into the experience. Happy Mother's Day to all those that participate. And look, you don't have to be a mother to participate in Mother's Day. If someone says Happy Mother's Day to you, you can simply say Happy Mother's Day to you back, male, female, kids, no kids. You can have a happy Sunday, a happy Mother's Day, regardless of your kid's status. Just be happy. Have a happy day. But especially to the moms out there today. Happy Mother's Day to my mom. If you haven't called your mom yet today, do so. She wants to hear from you. Trust me. I called my mom today. And called my girlfriend Tara, who is not a mother of any of my children. Happy Mother's Day, Tara, out there. Happy Mother's Day to all the moms. It's a good day. Except the fact for the Braves dropping 2 out of 3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pittsburgh this weekend. Goodness gracious alive. You're supposed to go in there and beat a team that had only won at the time 12 games. I guess before Friday, the Pittsburgh Pirates had only won 10 games on the season. You're supposed to beat these teams. At least that's what we tell ourselves. What a heartbreaker today. As the Pirates throw some guy that probably making his first start of the season, used to be a starter, I think, back in college or somewhere, maybe the minors. This is the story they told. Long last name that I'm not going to try to pronounce. Holds the Braves to like 2 hits over 6 innings. Offense, offense, offense. Let's rewind to Friday night. Bryce Elder earns himself another start, goes 6 innings. 3 earned runs. That's a quality start. Bryce Elder just continues to chuck 92-mile-an-hour softball or fastballs up there and earn himself new starts. I'm not a huge fan of Bryce Elder, but he's pitching well. He's pitching well enough to keep pitching. Of course, offense doesn't work on Friday. Bailey Falter gives up only 2 hits through 6. Braves lose. Another guy that deserves more starts, and let's hope that he stays up. I'm pretty sure that he will. It was never the intention to leave A.J. Smith-Shawver down for any extended period of time. A.J. Smith-Shawver pitches very well after throwing an absolute gem in his last time out. 5 5 2/3, gives up 1 earned run, strikes out 7. Troubles continue for Iggy. Scott Blewett, 2 innings pitched on Saturday. That's 2 outings in a row where he has to pitch with a ghost runner, the softball beer league extra innings rule runner. And he gets through both of those outings going two innings in a win in both without letting a run score. That is very difficult. When all you got to do is sacrifice, in theory, when all you got to do is sacrifice bunt a runner over to third, then a pop fly scores him. Scott Blewett doing things well. Braves went on Saturday. Then you get to today. Chris Sale pitches good, not great, not as great of an outing as he had, you know, the last time out. 5 2/3, gives up 3 earned runs, almost gets the quality start. If he gets another out, you know, 8 strikeouts, Braves can muster no offense. Braves do, however, get some offense in the 8th inning. Sean Murphy is pinch hitting for Drake Baldwin, who's been kind of a delight, comes through and Snit pushes that button, scores 3 in the 8th, gives you a glimmer of hope. Man. And then Rosell Iglesias, Iggy, as he's more affectionately known to Braves country. I don't even know that this one is quite, you know, his fault. We like to place blame on players. If you look at the box score, sure, he gave up the runs. But how about the most dinky-dunky way for the Pittsburgh Pirates to score in the 9th inning to walk this win off? You ought to know, if you watch the postgame show, I think Nick or Pete, one of them, the Pirates scored a run in the 9th inning without hitting the ball harder than 80 miles an hour. There was a ground ball hit right past Matt Olson that he almost got a glove on that didn't even bounce in the outfield. Didn't even bounce, just kind of rolled through the grass. There was a ground ball hit to score the winning run that Nick Allen dives for, can't hop up, and make the throw home for the force out that wins the game. Leaves his feet, hops back up. No balls hit over 80 miles an hour, just dinking and dunking their ways to a run. But you can't let that happen if you're Ozzie Iglesias. If you're a closer, and he's an elite closer for the last 3 years, he has been. Had that great stretch run last year. Hadn't been good for him this year, though. He's been hanging that slider. Third pitch, been hanging that slider. He's given up 6 home runs this year. Of course, you know, this is all well documented. We talk about this every day right here on Sports Radio 99 The Game. But I digress. It is Mother's Day. Garrett Chapman on the other side of the glass. Garrett, how's your weekend?
Hey, man, it was great. I took Mom out to lunch today.
Good for you.
And, yes, it was good. My girlfriend was there, and little brother was there, and it was a great time. It was a great time. We had a wonderful time. But you know who also had a really good time over the weekend? It was Joey Bart.
Joey Bart did have a good time over
he
the weekend.
What
did he go like?
Great time.
4 for 4 today?
No, he...
3 for 3, something like that. He did a lot of stuff today.
No, he was 2 for 5 today, but right. 2 RBIs. He had the big day yesterday as well. I mean, it's just... Yeah. I think he was the only guy who was finding... AJ
Buford Smith's product.
Record. Yeah.
Went to Georgia Tech, local boy.
Exactly. Yeah. No, I mean, he... what was it yesterday? He had... against A.J. Smith Shauver, he goes 3 for 3.
That's what I knew he had one of those days in
there
somewhere.
He was 3 for 3 against A.J. Smith Shauver. And A.J. Smith Shauver, going back to Monday in his last 2 appearances, batters are 3 for 35 against all other batters. That's what he is. Except for Joey Bart, who was 3 for 3. it's the kind of weekend it had. And look, and it's ultimately, I don't blame pitching at all. I saw a lot of people were... kind of harping on the bullpen.
Bro, it's not pitching, and it's surely, sure as hell not the bullpen. Like, look.
No.
Iggy's been not great. He's been giving up the long ball. He's given up the long ball a few times. But
6 times.
It has not been his fault that the Braves have failed to reach 500 again. Here come the Braves just can't reach 500 people. Here come the Braves are scared to reach 500 people.
Well, they're 0-4. It's becoming a theme. In fairness, it is becoming a theme.
It's becoming a theme, and I get that, but it's not the fact that they're not at 500 that is keeping them from getting to 500.
Well,
it's more coincidence than anything. It's not like it's a head game with them.
Well, baseball's all head games.
Yeah.
So I think that to say it doesn't matter at all, I think is also incorrect. To say it is the only thing that matters is very incorrect. But look, I think this team—it's just the way things go, and this team is going to figure it out. I'm still confident that they're going to be fine. The bullpen is pitching well. You know, it's pitching well above its weight class right now.
Starters are pitching well.
Starters are pitching really well. It's just a damn shame that Chris Sale keeps coming out here with these tremendous starts, and well, not tremendous by Chris Sale standards, but strong and consistent, and he's keeping opponents down. And he's giving you opportunities to win games. It's just he hasn't been getting any run support. It seems like it reminds me a little bit of what Jacob DeGrom, to a lesser degree, did a couple of years ago when he won a Cy Young for the New York Mets. The guy had a losing record, but a 1.5 ERA. Yeah. Now, again, I'm not saying that Chris Sale is that level right now. He's pitching.
Well, he won the Cy Young last year, and he gets zero run support. So it's very similar of a situation. Yeah. In the games that he's lost this year, at least out of his, you know, after the first couple of bad ones, he's pitched well in his last 4 starts. Just can't get any run support. And that's the problem with this team, has been run support. And no, it's not Snit. Hey, look, 404-726-0929. You can give us a call if you want to. Because, look, you know, I work at the ballpark, and when I get off work in time, like when the games are fast enough for me to get off work before 11 o'clock, I'll listen to Chris Thomas's Braves postgame or Atlanta baseball postgame show. And he takes callers. And I hear some of the most hottiest, takiest, and that's me putting it nicely, people out, like the fire snit people, where are y'all at? All right, I hear some of the fire snit people, and I heard one last week that just still, and if you're out there, snit doesn't manage bullpen person without giving any kind of examples of what he's done to not manage the bullpen. Snit has done a masterful job of managing this team. Should have been manager of the year last year. Continues to push the right buttons, push the right button today. I'm not sure what happened Friday because I was at the softball park all day Friday and Saturday. We'll get into a little bit of that in a little bit. Not exactly sure what happened with Alex Verdugo on Friday with a pinch hit. I guess he lost him. Maybe he was in the locker room dropping a deuce and Snit couldn't find Alex Verdugo. Because usually when a guy's just not up in the dugout and he's back in the locker room but he hasn't been asked to leave the game or anything, usually he's using the bathroom or something like that. So apparently on Friday, and I wasn't watching the game, it was at the softball park, so I don't know exactly what happened, but apparently Snit goes to pinch hit Alex Verdugo for someone, and he can't find him, but the clock is still counting down. And so that looks bad on the surface, but that's not Snit's fault that Alex Verdugo wasn't in the freaking dugout when his name was called. Don't know if that's been unveiled as to where he was, but I don't think that that matters either. But what are we going to, like, that's one of the guys. Alex Verdugo, Snit continues to run out there in the leadoff spot versus right-handed hitters. And look, Ozzy hadn't been any better versus left-handed hitters in the leadoff spot. But what are you going to do there? No one has been able to produce out of the leadoff spot, and that's a huge spot for the Braves. I've seen some chatter about people want Eli White to bat leadoff. You could feasibly hit Eli White first versus lefties. I wouldn't do it versus righties. Snit's a big matchup guy. He's not going to do that. I would love to see Michael Harris, who's about to pass Alex Verdugo in a couple of games in batting average. And look, Harris is in 227, but Alex Verdugo's down to 241 after a hot start.
He's not 1-for-15, though, in his last four games.
Who, Verdugo?
Verdugo.
Oh, no, he's been bad. He's been real, real bad. And look, Money hasn't been much better, but he's at least come through in some clutch situations. And what sucks about putting, like, he is the prototypical leadoff hitter. Of course, you only lead a game off once, blah, 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 blah. I know all that stuff. He is a table setter. He's got the tools to be that. He just hasn't performed well when put there in the past. But I don't know. Maybe, you put Verdugo there and he continues to not get the job done. Maybe you give Money some more opportunities. We don't know when Ronald Acuna is going back. I was listening to Grant's show on the way in. And Grant's thinking Ronnie's going to need like 10 games in the minors to get him back up to speed of Major League Baseball, which sounds a little extreme to me, but Grant knows more. He's more dialed into that type of situation. Guy's coming back from a second ACL, this time out for a full year, which is probably what they need. They don't need to, they need to take it lightly with him, make sure he's fully back. If he can be at least better than he was in 22. 22 was his first full year back after tearing his ACL in 2021, and he wasn't that good. Now, we don't expect the 40-70 MVP Ronald Acuna from 23 when he comes back, but if he can at least be a little bit better than he was in 2022, he's going to significantly help this team. So at the beginning of the season, I laid out, once again, I've done this for like 3 or 4 years in a row, my own personal expectations for this Braves team going into 2025. We are 6 weeks into the Major League Baseball season of 2025. That's a quarter of the season. And let me tell you, they are not performing up to expectation by any stretch, and that's not even only my expectation, that's anybody's expectation. So give us a call if you want to talk Braves, or if you're one of those fire Snit people, give me a call, because I wholeheartedly disagree. Snit's been the rock of this team and will continue to be that rock as these young guys continue to work their way through these troubling times that they're in. And keep in mind, this is a very young baseball team. All right, now look, a lot of these guys were also paid handsome sums of money to perform, and they are not performing to that level, with the exception of Austin Riley, who's been really good of late. I think he's hitting like 282 or something like that. I had his average up. But what do you do in the leadoff spot? What do you do for that table setter? As much as I'd like to say, get on here and whine and moan about Alex Verdugo, nobody else is performing any better.
Well, he's your only option right now.
Yeah, I guess, because they're all hitting look, like 240, 230, 220.
All I know is if I see Ozzy Albies in that leadoff spot again, I'm going to scream.
You're going to see it next time the Braves face a lefty.
No, and I'm going to scream, dude. You're gonna it's ridiculous.
What else would you do? Would you put Verdugo in there versus a lefty? He's worse versus lefties than Albies is because of Albies, and the right side is Albies' best side. That's why he was there Friday night.
Yeah, in theory, but the thing
is. And went 0-for-4. Yeah, look, I get it. I don't know what we're going to do about the leadoff spot, and
the answer is Treadwater.
Grant gave you some stats over the last 7 days. I'm going to give you some stats of how these guys are performing for the entire season. The six weeks in, we're 25% into the Major League Baseball season of 2025. And man, it's surprising that they're only two games under 500. Honestly, they've played really well after the 0-7 start. Mic stand issues. Apologies. They played really well after an 0-7 start. They're well above 500 since then, but you can't not count those 7 games. They're right there, and as much as we have to sit here and say, hey, it's going to get better, it is going to get better. As much as we have to sit here and talk about backs of baseball cards, that is a thing. They will regress to the mean, meaning they will come back to where their average is. They are all well below that right now. They have all significantly been, unfortunately, slow starters too. It'll come. We'll get some streaks in there. All right, we come back. We're going to experience the headlines because there's a lot more going on than the Braves just sucking against the Pirates this weekend. Georgia baseball didn't do too well over in Alabama this weekend. And the SEC championship for softball, very confusingly, ended in kind of a tie. We'll talk about all that and a lot more. There's a bunch of NBA semifinals going on as well. We'll be right back. 5 minutes. It's Bo Johnson Experience on Sports Radio 99 The Game.
Murphy out to left center. Bay sprints over. He won't get there. Circle the bases, boys. This ball game is tied at three. Sean Murphy off the bench with a bases clearing double.
Tell your children not to walk around me. Till today. Oh, mother. There it is. Little Danzig for you on Mother's Day. Told Garrett to sprinkle in some mother music. Boyz II Men made some good mother music. So did Tupac has a good mom song. We love our moms. Call your mom. Wait till the commercial break, though, the next one. That's going to be about 13 minutes or so. You can wait 13 more minutes. You haven't called your mom at 7:22 p.m. Sunday night, Mother's Day. You can wait 13 more minutes. Welcome back to The Experience. 404-726-0929 is the phone number. You can give us a shout if you want to join the conversation. That is also the number to the text line. I have the text line open. Any suggestions that you have, we're going to have a fantasy football conversation in the next segment. This, of course, experiencing the headlines. Going to move experience the headlines into the second segment from now on. Then we're going to do a little weekly rewind with some audio from throughout the week at the top of hour three, which would have typically been experience the headlines for those of you that have been following the show for years. Going to talk a little fantasy football for some way too early dynasty rookie rankings. We're also going to have a Travis Hunter conversation because the fantasy football world's kind of flipped upside down right now with what to do with Travis Hunter. And I don't know that we've gotten a clear explanation of what the fantasy football websites and or, you know, the sites or whatever you want to call the engines or the whatever are going to do with them. If they do some Shohei Ohtani type thing and split Travis Hunter into an offensive and defensive player, to me, that's a mistake. But we're going to talk about that in the next segment. We're also going to experience the NFL at the top of the 8 o'clock hour. And then how optimistic are you about the 2025 Falcons? Garrett Chapman is a huge Falcons fan. I'm going to ask him how he feels. I've got a series of questions here. We're going to kind of break it down by position group, see how optimistic he is. And then we can't have a Mother's Day show without involving some moms. The top five movie and or TV moms of all time. Now, these are our lists, Garrett and I's lists. Not yours, not the internet's. So if you disagree, that's fine. And then, of course, we're going to rewind the week with a little bit of audio at the top of the 9 o'clock hour and then talk about some Braves expectations then. So it is Mother's Day, and it is starting to rain here, or it has been raining in Midtown Atlanta. It's been raining all freaking weekend. Got rained out. I was at the ballpark all day Saturday. We started a softball game, got into the second inning, and kudos to the people over at Peachtree Ridge Park for at least trying to get some softball in on Saturday. Rumble at the Ridge is the Tri-Cities. This is the Tri-Cities is the league that we play in, and a lot of, you know, mostly Gwinnett County, other cities and counties directly surrounding us. But kudos to them for at least trying to get it in. But it got so bad that we had literal puddles in the right-handed batter's box. And we were kind of worried about player safety sliding into bases or accidentally sliding on bases and into. So tournament was stopped. We waited a little bit to see if it would mellow out. And it did, but unfortunately it just had rained so much the fields were in crappy condition. And it continues to rain today. It's also raining all weekend out in Athens. where the SEC tournament was being hosted by the Georgia Bulldogs. Now, the Georgia Bulldogs got ousted in round two, or maybe round one. They lost their first game. I don't know if they played in round one. I think they actually did. It was LSU that got ousted in round two. They had a first-round bye. But the rain was so bad that they ended up just stopping the whole tournament. And the tournament ended with Oklahoma and Texas A&M being named co-champs of the SEC due to bad weather. If you care about this type of thing, NCAA softball, their selection show is on where they are going to name the 16 schools that will host regionals. Now, unfortunately, Georgia's not going to be one of them because Georgia is ranked, if I'm not mistaken, let's see here. Georgia's ranked all the way down. That's before they lost in the SEC tournament. They were ranked at, I don't even see them on here. They're somewhere in there. Not in the top 16, though. Also happening over the weekend, Braves lost 2 out of 3 to the Pittsburgh Pirates. You did hear the one glimmer, the one little tiny smidget of hope that came in the 8th inning today by Sean Murphy. Brian Snicker decides to pinch hit for Drake Baldwin, who's been hot of late. Nice little addition to the team Drake Baldwin has been. Pinch hits Sean Murphy. Sean Murphy comes through with a bases-clearing double. Bases were loaded at that time, as you heard in the audio clip from Bally. So they sandwich a win in on Saturday in between two losses. We have no idea what we're going to do with this Atlanta Braves offense. But all we do know is that they will turn it around. Pitching has been great. So as long as pitching continues to be pretty good, the offense will come around. It has to. That's how sports works. You just have to have that faith. UGA baseball heads over to Alabama over the weekend and loses 2 out of 3. They put up 19 runs versus the Alabama Crimson Tide on Friday, and then lose the next two. So they drop 2 out of 3 to Alabama. The SEC baseball tournament starts on the 20th. And that'll be a lot of fun. Let's see, who are the top? Texas is still the number one ranked team in the country. They're going to go in as the favorite. LSU at 3, Georgia in at 6. They will probably slide a little bit because Alabama came into the weekend at 23. Georgia loses 2 out of 3 to them. So I would guess Georgia's probably going to fall to about 13. Alabama's kind of going to creep up to around 15 or so. But Dogs lose 2 out of 3 at Alabama after putting up 19 on Friday. The NBA semifinals are happening. Celtics are climbing back in there versus the Knicks. They'll play tomorrow. So Celtics beat the Knicks 115-93 yesterday after going down 0-2 to the Knicks. Jason Tatum, 22-9-7. Peyton Pritchard, 23 off the bench. Jalen Brunson leads the Knicks with 27. I think the Celtics are going to win this series in 7. Just think they're too good of a team to be playing this badly, or to continue playing badly versus the New York Knicks. So I think they climb back in there. T-Wolves take the Warriors down yesterday, 102-97. Minnesota leads that series 2-1. Anthony Edwards just takes this game over, 36-4-4. Julius Randle throws in 24 as well. T-Wolves are going to put the Warriors out. 6 games. That's all this is going to take. Anthony Edwards will be your semifinals MVP. Maybe the Western Conference Finals. I think the T-Wolves may go all the way to the finals behind the stellar play of Anthony Edwards. And, of course, today, Oklahoma City beat the Nuggets 92-87 to tie that series 2-2. SGA with 25 points. Joker with 22 points. And then Cavs and Pacers comes on, if I'm not mistaken, at 8 o'clock. We'll have that one on, and we'll update you on that one as we move along here. But what are we going to do with these Atlanta Braves and their offense? There's not a whole lot that we can do, to be honest with you. We just talked in the last segment about what to do at the leadoff spot. There's nothing you can do there. It's not like you can just plug and play another guy for Alex Verdugo or Ozzie Albies with the entire team. We could bat Austin Riley first. We could see how that works out. one of the only Braves in the lineup that is there every day that's batting over 260. See how that works. Not going to happen, but it's a fun thought. Too bad we can't bat Austin Riley everywhere. Do have the Washington Nationals coming to town for four. Then they go back on the road. Now, I'm not one to leave to make excuses on the MLB schedule, but these MLB schedule makers, they were on one this season when making the Braves schedule. They were probably on one when making a lot of people's schedules this season. I haven't looked at the entire schedule, the entire slate of MLB scheduling. But for the Braves to be on the West Coast for seven, then to come home and then go back out, then they have this weird series where they're in the middle of like 14 straight games, but they're on the road with no travel days baked into two different series. So they play a series at home, two series at home last week, immediately hit the road and pick back up in Pittsburgh on Friday, play Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then they are in the air probably right now, and they're coming home, and the Nationals are coming into town for four. Then they go back out on the road to Boston. Make it make sense. Now, I'm not saying that's an excuse of why the Braves are playing bad, but look, man, baseball is very much a mojo sport, and guys kind of need their rest. I get it. You play 162. Look at the amount of off days these teams have. Everybody plays 162. I get that, but not everybody has the same travel schedule. It's just been kind of crazy.
It's also why you can't super overreact to anything you've seen from any team.
Yeah, 100%. And look, you can't really react.
Well, you can't take
until
anything,
the end of May, and that's a third of the season. Now, once we get to May 31st, that should be right around the time when we're going to get Acuna back, or at least we will know. Spencer Strider could be back for the Boston series. Let's hope, he's not going to go through any rehab starts. He threw it on the bullpen yesterday. He says he feels fine. He's ready to go. It's whether or not the Braves feel like he's ready to go, how much more they want to see. At least we're not going to have to see him pitching Gwinnett before he comes back to pitch in the big squad. But it wouldn't surprise me if Spencer Strider pitches at least one of these games in Boston next weekend.
But you need sample sizes.
Yeah.
Like, you need to take anybody who says, oh, well, the Braves are so bad in this series, or the Braves are so bad in this week. No, you need at least a month. You need to look at least a month for a sample
size. More than that. I mean, you can't really tell.
I'm saying minimum.
If the Braves are right at 500 on May 31st, now what's going to change that is getting Ronald Acuna back. And we're probably not going to have him back by May 31st, but that's 2 months into the season. If you ask anybody that studies baseball or studies patterns or analytics of baseball teams and stats, you can't really tell who a team is until right around the end of May. That's a third of the season. You can get a good grip on who your legit Cy Young contenders are, who your legit MVP contenders are. You're going to still know that the Dodgers are the best team in baseball on May 31st, but you don't know where the Braves are going to be in relation to where the Mets are.
One perfect example of this, and I always harken back to this, is the Washington Nationals in 2019. What they were in the this stage of the season, right? They were one of the worst teams in baseball. I think they were right alongside of like what the Pittsburgh Pirates are doing or something like that, just like 15-ish wins, and then coming up to like May 22nd is when they flipped the switch. But really, everybody got healthy, and they brought their roster back, and then they had this stat that they kept throwing at everybody on Twitter was like, oh, the best team in baseball since May 22nd. This is our record, and I made fun of them for it. And in hindsight,
that's a thing, though.
That's a serious thing. And if you're the better team over the course of – it's 162-game sample size, but if you're the best team in baseball for the final two-thirds of the season, that's a meaningful stat.
100%. And look, there's no better example of that than the 2021 Braves. Braves weren't even over 500 that season until August and went on a run and won the World Series. Were they the best team in baseball that season? No, they didn't even win 100 games. They didn't even win 90. They won like 88, 87,
88
something like
games,
that. 88
games. The Brewers, I think, won 94, 95, maybe 96. They're in that middle 90 range. The Giants and the Dodgers both won 104 games that year.
So it's very much, ride the hot hand is a phrase you hear with baseball managers a lot, but it's very much a real thing, and that goes for individuals, and it goes for teams. So don't fret, Braves fans. It will get better. I know you're tired of hearing people say this, and it's frustrating, but at least you're not the Colorado Rockies who just fired Bud Black today. At least you're not the Pittsburgh Pirates who, hey, just took 2 out of 3 from the Braves with new coach energy. They just fired their manager last week. That's not going to happen to Snit. I hate to tell you, you Snit haters out there. So, and it doesn't need to.
I'm not planning on doing a wild card series. Planning on winning the East.
That's right. That's right. Tell him, Snit.
I mean, all that was just heart and nuts.
Tell him, AJ, who's out for the season. Sad. But he's a Met now, so oh well. All right, we come back. We got an hour's worth of football for you. We're going to start it off by talking some fantasy football. That's my thing here at Sports Radio 99 The Game. Dynasty rankings. Is it too early? Probably so, but we're going to talk about it because it's fun. We'll be back in about 5 minutes. This is Bo Johnson on the Bo Johnson Experience on Sports Radio 99 The Game. I'm just a poor boy from a poor family. Oh, I need no sympathy. There we go, jacking up the words. Little low. Doesn't really matter. To me. Welcome back to the experience. Bo Johnson here with you. Here to talk a little fantasy football. Mama. Garrett found a song that worked mama and fantasy in with it. There you go. I like what you're doing over there, G-Chap. From the text line in regards to the Braves, so I don't know. One of my pet peeves with text messaging people, and it bleeds over into the text line because you do that with your phone on a text. It's literally the text line. It's people that don't use... periods and commas and exclamation points, punctuation.
Or all caps.
It's just like one run-on sentence.
Or all caps.
So from the 864, so sick weakness of ATL media, this has sucked in last 162, 81, and 81. I get that. The Braves are 81 and 81 in the last 162 games. And they are playing like an average team right now. We have fully acknowledged that, 864. I'm just saying that it's going to get better. It's not going to get worse. All right? It will get better. They will not finish a 500 team or below 500 after this 162 that we're currently in the middle of. Let's talk some fantasy football here. Because the 2025 NFL draft has happened. Now we are awaiting the 2025 fantasy football draft season, and that is not right now. If you're one of those lunatics, and I am in one of these leagues, I'm in two leagues, actually. I'm in one that's simply waiting on everyone to pay. So had I thought about this, I would have myself not paid already. Because as soon as everyone pays, we're going to start a draft in like May or June or whenever that is. And then I have I'm in a dynasty league, a big one, that already has a draft on the calendar. This is a 14-team dynasty league, has a draft on the calendar for June 3rd. Training camp isn't until July. You should not be doing fantasy football drafts before training camp. You shouldn't really be doing fantasy football drafts before the preseason. Everybody knows the pain. Look, I get it. NFL teams do drafts in April. But this is just fantasy football. You can do it whenever you want. You can get as much information as you want. You can let them play a couple preseason games if you want, because you don't want to draft injured players, and a player that gets injured in preseason will still get drafted, but just not as high as they win. That's part of the strategy. Taking that player that got injured in preseason earlier than your league mates might take that player. So it's not time to do fantasy football drafts, but it is time to start talking about it, because fantasy football is a 24/7, 365 business, just like the NFL is. So I think Garrett has some notes of his own. I went through 16 players, and I just had to stop because I knew that I was not going to be able to. I probably won't get through all 16 of these in this segment. But we're going to talk about dynasty drafts and only rookies right now. And I hope we have time for the Travis Hunter conversation in fantasy football too, because that needs to be had. If we don't have time, I'm back with you, I think, next Sunday, because the Braves were here for four, then they're away again. I'm usually on Sundays when the Braves are out of town. We can have it then, or we can have it later on in the show, or both. But the number one overall pick, I assume that both of us probably have for a dynasty draft that will be starting like right now, because if the guy gets hurt, that may change things, depending on what the injury is, though. Like if Ashton Jeanty pulls a hammy in training camp and or preseason, You may still see Ashton Jensen go number one overall in a rookie draft. I don't know. But I have Ashton Jensen number one overall in dynasty rookie drafts. Very little competition in Las Vegas to be the RB1. He's already inserted there on the depth chart. We all know how Pete Carroll feels about running the football. We also know that Geno Smith is the quarterback of the Raiders, and they have zero outside of Jacoby Myers and Brock Bowers, and Brock Bowers is going to be another force this season. He's probably going to finish this year as the best tight end in football again. Ashton Jensen, the number one overall dynasty pick, or at least he should be. Garrett, do you say anything otherwise?
It would take Ashton Jensen getting hit by a bus to not draft him number one.
Yeah, or like an ACL or something.
No.
Because if it's a hammy,
I'm still taking him.
There you go.
One.
All right, and that's a great example of how good he should be. Ashton Jensen's probably going to be taken. He's definitely probably going to be taken in the top 10 of redrafts. And these are leagues where, you know, all the players are in. In redraft formats, Ashton Jensen is going to be a top 10 running back, or at least he should be. There could maybe be an argument for Ashton Jensen to be a top five. He will definitely be one of the top five running backs taken. I don't know if he's going to be a top five
overall.
He's
not a top five player. There's some
pretty good wide receivers that would kind of be upset if Ashton Jensen goes before them.
It also depends on your scoring formats and everything.
It does, yeah.
But you can't justify him being a top five pick in a redraft league. You just can't.
So if it was non-PPR, I could maybe see it. And this is just me, you know, throwing out a line there to see if I would get a nibble. But no, I agree with you.
Yeah.
But top 10 pick, most certainly,
kind of
definitely the number one overall dynasty pick.
100%.
Number two, Garrett and I do have a switcheroo for two and three. I've got Travion Henderson, running back for the New England Patriots. Very fast guy, has three down potential. The only thing in his way is Ramondre Stevenson, which will probably be kind of a thorn in his side early on in the season. But I think Travion Henderson actually ends up taking that job from Ramondre Stevenson. I own Ramondre Stevenson in a tons of leagues, and now I'm going to have to just deal with the fact that Ramondre Stevenson's probably going to be relegated to a RB2 on that team, which is going to push his value way down into like the 40s and into the 20s of running back rankings, assuming Travion Henderson does not get hurt. Now, Garrett, you have somebody different at number two.
I do.
And I think, do we have just two and three switched?
We do.
All right.
Travion Henderson's my RB3 and my number three player overall. So yeah, it literally is a complete one for one switch. But Travion Henderson, I think is the sky is the limit there.
Yeah.
I think the way his skill set fits into this offense up there in New England, I think is going to be tremendous. And there's just a clear lack of playmakers. So I see where your head is. It's just that the one to one competition right there with Ramondre Stevenson is a lot tighter to me than what it is for Amarian Hampton and Najee Harris.
And
I also think that there's going to be more work in Los Angeles there for Amarian Hampton.
So Garrett has Amarian Hampton at number two and Travion Henderson at number three. So the reason why I had them ranked the way that I do is because I don't think that there's going to be that much competition by Ramondre Stevenson as much as there will be by Najee Harris on the Chargers for Amarian Hampton. All right, and this is why you want to wait till the preseason, because you want to see how these guys and at least, you know, through training camp.
Yep.
Because you're going to be able to see who's running mostly with the ones. I think this is going to be Najee Harris's job from the get-go, and it may be Ramondre's job from the get-go in New England. But Mike Vrabel brought in his own guy, and that's Travion Henderson. We know that Mike Vrabel is going to run the ball a lot. The Chargers are going to run the ball a lot too. If you have the number two overall pick, I think either of these guys are going to be good. You also have Kamani Vidal over there in Los Angeles. That did all right when he got opportunities last season. He just wasn't a fantasy asset.
And that's what doesn't make a lot of sense to me with the draft strategy.
Why they even drafted him?
The draft strategy doesn't make a lot of sense here to me. Because
by the Chargers.
The Chargers. Yeah. You invest a lot of capital into Kamani Vidal last year. Somebody who, you got him in, the third, fourth round? That's somewhere that you're expecting that person to be a contributor year one, if not year two. And then you go out and get a Amarian Hampton.
After signing Najee Harris.
And then you sign Najee Harris. You have a little triumvirate back there in the backfield of guys who I feel like could really take a big step forward. And that's after letting J.K. Dobbins walk, too. So I think it's an interesting situation. It just, like you said, it all depends on what happens in training camp at the running back position. But I do like the skill set just overall of Amarian Hampton. And I think the draft capital has to convey at some level. You draft a running back in the second round, he's not going to miss snaps.
Yeah.
That's
right.
Just all there is to it.
I think the best case scenario for the Chargers could be the worst case scenario for fantasy football, and that's all three of them are healthy
exactly.
And all three of them get carries.
Yeah.
But and that's exactly what the Chargers want.
As far as the dynasty league goes, I know you can only project about a year in advance. Like if you're stashing somebody who could be good in 3 to 5 years, I think that's foolish at this point. But for a dynasty, you can stash for a year to come. I think he can compete to be an RB1 in the next 2 years or so.
Yeah, not necessarily he will be kind of a. Both these guys are probably going to be, you know, I can see probably taking Travion Henderson, you know, maybe third, fourth round. I can see Omarion Hampton just because of Kamani Vidal and Najee Harris maybe going in the sixth, seventh round, something like that. He'll be kind of a sleeper-type pick this season to redrafts. Number four for me is the first wide receiver that I have on this list, and it's Tet McMillan, wide receiver for the Carolina Panthers. Look, Xavier Leggett was hurt for a lot of last season, did have a few touchdown catches, didn't really do anything to separate himself from anybody else, from Jalen Coker, from anybody else on the Carolina Panthers. Tet McMillan, who could very well come into this team as the wide receiver one after they get out of training camp. Tet McMillan, I think, is the wide receiver with the highest upside for winning this year. All right, when I go into dynasty drafts, I always consider winning this year. I want a guy that's going to play this year in the first round, which is what most people are going to, you know, go for. I don't think that's anything new for anyone. So I've got Tet McMillan at number four. I've got Quinshon Judkins, running back for the Cleveland Browns, at number five. Nick Chubb is a free agent, not likely to be back. Stefanski runs a run-heavy offense. And they're also going to have a rookie quarterback at the helm. We have no idea who that quarterback's going to be. All we do know is that it's going to be one of the two guys that are fighting for a job over in Cleveland. Both those guys are going to want to check the ball down. Quinshon Judkins has been in a couple videos. You've seen Shedeur Sanders passing the ball to Quinshon Judkins. People are making a big deal out of it. I like what Quinshon Judkins is bringing to the table. He may start as the RB1. We just don't like what he brings to the table as much as Ashton Jeanty or the other two guys that we've already mentioned. What do you have for your numbers 4 and 5?
I'm worried this Quinshon Judkins pick. It's not because of Quinshon Judkins here. It's because they also drafted Dylan Sampson.
Yeah.
And Dylan Sampson out of Tennessee, I thought was going to be a potential third-round pick on his own. And I'm blown away that they took two running backs that I think have a really, really high ceiling. I think it's good for them just in a situation where they have absolutely.
They've got zero on the depth chart.
They have zero on the depth chart. I mean, it's not really a good situation up there in Cleveland because Nick Chubb is a free agent, but you also have a quarterback situation that's dreadful. And I'm just worried about the share that's going to happen in that backfield. It's not going to be a very high flying offense. There's not going to be a lot of scoring done. They're not going to be picking up a lot of offense necessarily. It's going to be kind of a ground and pound and just sort of bleed clock and play good defense. That's really the model there. So it's going to be ugly, and I don't think you're going to get enough carries to really make it a big statistical impact in year one.
They also have Jerome Ford on the team. And then they have – who was it that picked DeAndre Carter? Was it that picked number two? Of course, he's a wide receiver. But so they have a few guys there, but nobody that really stands out over in Cleveland. So then we get to Travis Hunter. I've got Travis Hunter all the way down at six. I've got friends that are talking about drafting Travis Hunter as early as pick number two. I haven't met anyone say they were going to draft Travis Hunter as a number one overall dynasty pick. We have no idea what Travis Hunter is going to be used as in the NFL. We assume it's going to be – most of the experts say use Travis Hunter as a cornerback first, then a wide receiver in some packages. There are others that say use Travis Hunter as a wide receiver, and he may be better than Brian Thomas already. I don't know that I'm going to go quite there because Brian Thomas had a stellar rookie year. But until we see where Travis Hunter is going to be used and how much, and we won't see that until we get to preseason.
They say they're going to use him both ways.
They say that, but do you think he's going to last if they do that?
I also said that he couldn't do it at the collegiate level.
And when they say they're going to use him both ways, is that packages on both sides or is that every play on both sides? Surely he's not going to be in there for 75% of the snaps on both offense and defense. There's no way a single human being could hold up
not
in the NFL that way.
Not in the NFL.
In college,
I just had a hard time. Not even college. He's a unicorn to do it in college. Nobody's done that at that level. So his endurance, his stamina is incredible, but to do that and to prepare on a weekly basis to be a professional is a different thing entirely. This isn't the Big 12. Like, you're going to be facing $25, $30 million wide receivers now. Like, sorry, Jamar Chase is going to line up against you. You're going to be a cornerback one. You need to be focused on Jamar Chase, period.
And he's also going to be facing, not only from the defensive side, but on the offensive side, he's going to be facing, you know, NFL wide cornerbacks and safeties.
But the thing is, they say he's that good. He's that good. I mean, they won a Biletnikoff last year. So, I mean, he's a damn good wide receiver.
Yeah.
We've seen what he was able to do at Colorado. We saw him here at Collins Hill here in Atlanta. The guy can do just about anything on a football field. It's just the endurance in asking him to do that and stay at that high level is going to be a lot to ask.
I think for any single human being, I don't care how good of a college football player you are, to even have the inclination of playing 80% of snaps on both sides is setting yourself up for failure. I don't think he's going to see that until we get into, you know, more of these rookie camps and training camps and stuff like that. So far, through training camp, he has only played – he's only caught passes in you know, rookie camp that happened over the weekend.
Hey, I'll say this,
next week's going to put him in on defense. We'll see how it goes.
Even Aaron Donald had a welcome to the NFL moment.
So we will – I've got, like, eight more guys. Where do you have Travis Hunter overall in dynasties?
I have him about right here.
Yeah, so – we'll get into a little bit more of this conversation if we can squeeze it in a little bit later. I've got all the way out to 16. It's a fun conversation to have. On the other side, may even have it in Experience the NFL, because that's next. Give us about 5 minutes. It's Bo Johnson Experience on Sports Radio, 99 The Game.